Okay, we're in Perek Chaf, chapter 20. We're in the middle of the Perek. And we're going to just run through some of the previous psukim that we've already read just to refresh ourselves. So, basically, David is concerned that Shaul wants to kill him because Shaul has already attempted that before, and he wants to get clarification, so he basically comes up with this plan with Yonasan that David will be absent from the Rosh Chodesh meal. We spent a lot of time talking about Rosh Chodesh and Rosh Chodesh meals and whether that's a thing or not. He's going to see how Shaul reacts to that, and based on that, he'll get a sense of how whether Shaul's attitude towards him has changed or not. So they devised that plan, and then they added a little bit more detail to the plan, and that's what we'll read through quickly, starting from verse 18. So, Pasuk Yud Ches. So it says, Vayomer lo Yehonasan machar chodesh. And Yehonasan, again, we're in Perek Chaf, chapter 20, Pasuk Yud Ches, verse 18. Machar chodesh, tomorrow is Rosh Chodesh. V'nifkadata, and you will be called, Kim Yipakeid Moshevecha, because your seat is going to be empty. So Shaul is likely to ask about you. V'shilashta teired ma'od, and for 3 days you should go deeper and deeper into hiding. Uvasal hamakom ashenistarta sham biyom ha'maaseh, and you should come to the place that you had previously hidden on the day of work, which we talked about last time. What that refers to on when it's not Rosh Chodesh, the place where you hid. The Yashavta Eitzala Evan Azon, you should sit near this certain stone that people use as a signpost. Vani, and I, this is how I'm going to get the message to you as to whether you should stay, you should come out of hiding and everything's fine, or if you should go, you know, run away. So what we'll do is, Vine Yashlakasanar, sorry, I skipped a pasuk. Chafani shloshes hachitzim tzida oreh. I will shoot 3 arrows to the side of this even, this stone. L'shalachu l'matara, to send towards this target. Vinei eshlach es hanar, and then I am going to send my lad. Leich mitzayas hachitzim, go find the arrows. And this is how I'm going to signal to you whether you should come out or run. Im amar amar lanar. If I say to the lad, hinei hachitzim imcha vahena, if I tell him that the arrows are further from you, are closer from you, are close, so then, kachenu vavoa, you should take them, either, he's telling David, either take the arrows or take the lad and come back, but take something and come back. Ki shalom lecha, because everything's peaceful, everything's good. Ve'ein davar, and there's nothing to worry about. Chai Hashem, by the life of Hashem, he swears that everything is fine if he does that. V'imko omar la'elam, but if I say the following to the lad, hinei hachitzim imcha v'hala, the arrows are from you and further, so then, leich, then you should run away. Ki shilachecha Hashem, because that means that Hashem has sent you on your way. Hashem is telling you to go away. Now, we mentioned last time that there were two very different understandings of what he was telling him. According to Rashi, he was engaging in nichush, in divining the future. And he was just going to shoot the arrow, you know, randomly. And based on where it landed, that would tell him whether, you know, he would see that as a sign from Hashem, whether you should run away or whether you should stay close. If it lands close, then you could come out of hiding. If the lane's far away, then you should run away. That's how Rashi learned. We talked last time how that could be halachically acceptable to do that. The other, basically all the other Mefarshim learned that no, this was not just shoot it randomly and see where it lands. This was just how he was going to signal to him whether it was safe to come out or not. I'll deliberately aim it, you know, and if I aim it close, then, and I say to the lad, oh, it's close, you know, so then it means it's safe to come out. And if I shoot it far and I say to the lad, oh, I sent it really far, go and get it, so then it means go and run away. And it was just a secret code to tell David, who was hiding, whether it was safe to come out or he should run away. Okay, Pasuk Chaf Dalet, verse 24. Vayisaser David basadeh, and David hid in the field. Vayehi hachodesh, and it was Rosh Chodesh. Vayeshev hamelech el halechem leechol, and the king sat down to this meal that we've been talking about, to this meal to eat. Vayeshev hamelech al moshavo kifam befam. And the king sat in his seat as he did each time, El Moshav Hakir, the seat that was near the wall. Vayakam Yehonasan, and Yehonasan got up. Vayeshev Avner Mitzad Shaul, and Avner sat next to Shaul. Vayipaked Mekom David, and David's seat was empty. So what did... Pasuk is interesting. It says Yonasan got up. It doesn't say where he got up from. And it says that Avner sat next to Shaul. It sounds like that which Yonasan got up had something to do with that Avner sat next to Shaul. What did it have to do with it? So Rashi says that he got that Yonasan, I guess, sat for a moment, but then he got up because apparently it wasn't normal or wasn't appropriate for the son to sit right next to the father, right next to the king. Now he says, because they would normally, everybody would have their own little couch to eat on. They would eat on these little beds or couches. And normally, David was in between Shaul and Yonasan. So Yonasan was not next to his father. That was what they normally did. However, this time, David wasn't there. So Yonasan got up from his seat because there was nobody in between him and his father until Avner came and sat in between them. So then Yonasan sat. Avner, we haven't really met him, but he is Shaul's general. So, yeah. Now the poskim discuss is this a real halacha? Are you really not allowed to sit next to your father? There's different seems like there's different opinions. Some I think say that it was specifically I don't know why, but the way that they sat because they lay on those beds for some reason was less appropriate to be close to the father when you're eating in that fashion. But on normal seats. Right.
So maybe it's like the way
Right, because they reclined on couches. That's how they ate, like Roman style. I mean, this was long before that, but and apparently so some poskim say it's not that you can't sit next to your father, but you can't lie and eat in this way next to your father. Somehow this would be less appropriate. And that's why Yonasan had to make sure that there was someone in between them. Okay, Velodiber Shaul, next verse, Velodiber Shaul Meuma Bayomahu. Shaul didn't say anything on that day, the first day that David was absent, Ki Amar Mikrehu, because he said it's happenstance, he happens not to be here. Bilti Tahorhu, he's not Tahor, he's not pure. Ki Lo Tahor, because he's not pure. He's not pure because he's not pure. That's what he said. Oh, good question. What does that mean? Not pure because he's not pure.
Kind of like repetition of same thing.
Yes, that's the question, right? What does that mean? So first of all, What does it mean, mikrehu? It's happenstance that he's not here. A mikre is a happenstance. So again, pashut pshat, simple reading is he happens to not be here. He had something come up. That's how the Radak learns. Something came up, so he's not here. He had to take care of something. Okay. I guess not. No, do we really mean something? It doesn't mean happenstance that he's saying it's coincidence. It means something happened, something came up. Okay, but that's what it means. So, now, and according to that, so then if you continue along, then you read bilti tahar. So there's the word bilti is actually a difficult word to translate. It can sometimes mean like a lack of something, but it could also mean apparently that it is. Or because, I guess. Because. So the first understanding is he's not here, something came up, bilti tahar, but he is tahar. He's pure, he could have come. Or kilo tahar. Or that alternatively, he says, the reason he's not here is because he's not pure. Because he became tameh, he became ritually impure. And in those days, so they were accustomed not to eat. If somebody was pure and somebody wasn't pure, they wouldn't eat together. Like they became tummy, touched something that was a dead body or an animal that makes you tummy. So he became impure from that. Possibly. Again, that's what he's entertaining. He's saying either he is tahar, but just something came up, or he's not tahar, and that's why he's not here, because he doesn't want to eat with us, because they wouldn't eat together if some people were pure or some people are not. That's one. Or it's possible that they were serving shlamim, karbanos, there, and therefore you couldn't eat if you weren't pure. Or he says, alternatively, a third idea is that it may just be improper to show up to a meal if you're not pure. Just a derech eretz, you don't come if you're not pure, if you're tamei. That's what the Radak says. Three reasons why he may not have come if he was impure, either because they wouldn't eat together, if the people who are pure with people who are impure, or because they were serving karbanos, they were serving offerings, shlamim offerings, the meat from the offerings, and you had to be pure to eat that meat, or because it just wasn't proper to show up if you were impure, if you were tamei. Now that's the Radak. Other Mefarshim, including Rashi, learn that Mikrehu means he became a Baukeri. He had a seminal emission overnight, which makes a person tame. Makes a person tame, and they need to go to the mikveh for that, in order to be able now to eat from karbanos, or to become pure again. So that's how Rashi learns. And then you would read the pasuk. Ki amar mikrehu, he said a occurrence happened to him, meaning he became a baal keri. The word baal keri, which is the way that we describe that, that's how I mean, really the Torah calls it mikre laila. It calls it a nocturnal event, right? So that's what he could be referring to here. Mikrehu, he had this event occur to him, this emission, and therefore bilti tahar, and therefore he's not tahar. Kilo tahar, because he's not tahar. Now, what could that mean? He's not tahar because he's not tahar.
What? Hasn't been purified?
Possibly. So Rashi doesn't give a pshat. Actually, Rashi does. Right. According to Rashi, you read the pasuk. Mikrehu, he became a balkari, bilti tahar, and he still hasn't purified himself. And he's not coming kilo tahar because he's not pure, and that's why he's not coming. So the kilo tahar at the end is explaining therefore why he's not coming, because he's not tahar. The Abarbanel learns that there was a much more insulting intention with this line. Mikrehu bilti tahar, he became a balkari, he had a seminal emission, and he's not tahar. Why? Kilo tahar, because he's not a pure person. Because he has thoughts of you know, dreams and thoughts of Neoph, of adultery and adulterous thoughts and all these bad thoughts, and that's why he had such a thing occur to him, and that's kilotar. It's in Saul. You're saying he must not be tar. Kilotar, he's not a pure person. He has all these thoughts in his head, and that's why he became tummy.
It seems like a really weird thing for Shaul to think that that's why he's out there. Like, I'm just thinking, you think, is he someone out there, like someone like David? You think, oh, maybe he's out on the field, maybe he's, you know, visiting his father or something. It seems like a random thing to think.
Right, so if you go with this of Arbanel's, then maybe it's more understandable. He had these, he didn't hold of David, he thought, you know, he thought he was lowly, having a low life. So he's going to assume, you know, that...
That's probably the most likely thing.
Right.
Because, like, a random thought like that, like, if someone didn't come this year, that's not what
right.
you would think.
Right.
Like, that's the last thing you would think.
Right. Well, especially nowadays where we don't have this practice. But, yeah. I mean, the truth is, part of another issue with this pshat is that a person becomes a Balkari even when they're with their wife, you know, and having a mission. It's not necessarily just from a, you know, something that happens on its own. Just normal intimacy makes a person into Balkari, and they go to the mikvah for that. So it's not necessarily, it doesn't have to be something that's, you know, that has to be looked down upon. He wrote it off. He said, okay, David's not here, but there's some kind of explanation. Pasuk Chaf Zayin, verse 27. Vayehi mimacharas hachodesh hasheni. And it was the next day, the chodesh hasheni, the second day of the month, or of Rosh Chodesh. We'll talk about that in a moment. Vayipakeid mikom David. And David's seat was once again empty. Vayomer Shaul el Yehonasan b'no. And Shaul said to Yehonasan his son, Madua lova ben Yishai gam tamo gam ayom el alechem. El alechem, why didn't the son of Yishai, ben Yishai, come, which is David, yesterday or today, to the meal? Where is he? So first of all, let's just point out, when he calls him, Madua lo ba ben Yishai. Why didn't ben Yishai come? So he calls him. When you call someone, you know, son of Yishai, so it's an insult. I mean, it's not. It's a negative way of speaking about.
No place to be insulted.
What's that?
Because of his father, where is he? Not because of his son.
Oh, you might be referring to Zichus. You're saying.
Yes.
Right. Well, we find also in Parsha Shlach by the Meraglim. So Kalev, we know Kalev is one of the good guys. He silences all the Meraglim. So the way he silences them is, he says, the way that Rashi brings it down is this the only thing that Ben Amram did to us? And he says it he calls Moshe Rabbeinu Ben Amram. And he makes it sound like he's going to tack on more insults and more complaints. And that's how he gets everyone to be quiet. All the people are complaining. And then he says, oh, you know, but actually Moshe Rabbeinu, he took us out of Egypt. You know, he was the one who, you know, did all this great stuff for us. But he says, is this the only thing Ben Yishai has done for us? Ben Amram... That's how he calls Moshe Rabbeinu. Same thing. It's insulting in order to make them think that he's about to rip on him, but he doesn't.
So, like, in the Rosh Hashanah Davening, we say Baruch HaNer L'Rim Shai. Why do we see that? Is that, like, an insult?
So that's a good question. We do call David sometimes, we on our own call David Ben Yishai, right? In the Rosh Hashanah Davening, we say Baruch HaNer L'Rim Yishai M'Shichecha. We call David in the context. We also do it in Lechadodi, I think.
Right. So maybe it's not a
right. Right. So okay. Yeah, we have.
Yeah, but then we say Mashiach. I mean.
Right. We do it in a positive light there. Right. So right, it may depend on. Yeah. No, it's a good point.
No, but also Yeshua says the Yesh Shalom Israel.
What happened?
Yesh Shalom Israel.
Yesh.
I mean,
there is a abbreviation which actually implies.
Maybe it's also giving cover to the father, like even though David was such a great king and everything. Maybe we do it to pay homage to the person who had him, the
right.
father.
Now, we have mentioned in the past that there seemed to be like two stages of David's appointment. The first was there's a son of Yishai, or maybe it was Yehuda. I may be getting confused. I don't know. Okay, I'm not sure. Yeah. Okay, anyways, fine. So, the other thing that we have to point out in this pasuk is the beginning of the pasuk. Vayehi mimacharas hachodesh hasheni. It was...
bad word.
What?
Sometimes it's...
You can say it a bit louder.
Sometimes it's something not really good.
To say what?
When say
oh, vayehi. Okay, yeah. Yeah, I'm not sure when that applies. But, okay, it could be. It applies over here. Vayehi mimacharas hasheni, hachodesh hasheni. I was going to focus more on hachodesh hasheni. So what does chodesh hasheni mean? The second chodesh. What's that referring to? We're not talking about a month later.
Second day of the month, it says
right.
here.
Second day of the month. So different mefarshim, right? It can't be that it was the next Rosh Chodesh, because David's not hiding out for a month right now. He's hiding out for just a couple days. So Rashi says, Machras HaChodesh means the day after the new moon. The day after, and Beyom Sheni HaChodesh, the second day of the month. And that's it. That's what he says. Now other mefarshim here say, that it means it was the second day of Rosh Chodesh. It was the second day of Rosh Chodesh. Now that brings us back to the discussion we had last time about was there such thing as 2 days of Rosh Chodesh back in those times? See, nowadays we have 2 days of Rosh Chodesh. We have a calculated calendar. And whenever we have Rosh Chodesh, whenever we have a Malay, a full month of 30 days, so then we have 2 days of Rosh Chodesh. And one of them is the 30th day of the last month, and the next one is the first day of the new month. Those are the 2 days of Rosh Chodesh. Would they have had that in that time, 2 days of Rosh Chodesh? Would they have called the 30th day Rosh Chodesh? So, I mean, I would assume not. The way that they would be Mekadesh the Chodesh, they would make it Rosh Chodesh, was witnesses would see the new moon, they'd come to Beis Din, and Beis Din would declare Rosh Chodesh. And what day of Rosh Chodesh was that? It was always the first day. It was the first of the new month. Right? It was always the first of the new month. And they didn't know how long the month was going to be. Sometimes it was 30 days, sometimes it was 29 days. And they didn't know. And then as soon as someone came, then they made it Rosh Chodesh. So it seems it wasn't typical, or you would assume that they wouldn't have had this concept of 2 days of Rosh Chodesh.
And if it was cloudy, it could have been maybe like a 26-day month, because thus they were delayed by a couple days.
No, so they were always, if they didn't sanctify on the 30th day, then they do it on the 31st day, whether they saw the moon or not. But we mentioned last week that there are Mefarshim, Rabbeinu Bechaya, it brings from Rabbeinu Hanano, that they always calculated Rosh Chodesh on its own, they mean based on a calculation. And the witnesses was just like an added thing. But they were always, he said that they, you know, Rabbeinu Hanano is a very early Rishon. Late, you know, end of the Gaonim time, beginning of the Rishonim. He says that they always calculated Rosh Chodesh. And it was always worked on a calculation, and they always knew, I guess. Yeah, I mean, this runs into many problems. I'm just thinking about it. They always worked based on a calculation. How does he understand that they always knew that it was Rosh Chodesh?
But then you have all the whole issue
well,
of having
the
7 days and everything
right.
drops away. Who cares what the Pesukim did?
So I'll tell you what he means, I think. What he says actually is that Beis Din would calculate it.
For a year or years.
Beis Din would calculate it for that month based on when the Molad is, and they would make it, and they would know when it should be Rosh Chodesh. And I think they would still wait for witnesses, but they worked on calculation.
Because sometimes there is false witnesses. So they have to know whether it's like...
Sorry, one second. They would work, they would know when it is. Right, but what the question is, what does he say, is he going to go so far as to say they would sanctify it even without... Can I borrow that one? Thank you.
Wouldn't they be their own witnesses?
Let's just see how they say it here. Right, so what we talked about last time was that right here we say in this parak, they actually bring a proof from this parak. It says Machar Chodesh, tomorrow is Rosh Chodesh. So how did David know that tomorrow is Rosh Chodesh if it hasn't been unless they were going to calculate it based on the cheshbon, unless they were going to sanctify it based on the calculation.
Babylonian astronomers must have worked this out centuries.
No, certainly before. They knew the calculations, right? So the question is, they knew how to calculate it. So, would they actually make it Rosh Chodesh without witnesses coming or not? That's really the question at hand. Do you wait for witnesses who saw the moon, or do you work? Will you work based on a calculation? So I guess maybe what you're alluding to, what you could say is, he didn't know for sure it was going to be Rosh Chodesh, but he knew that there was going to be a moon, and it's likely that witnesses would see it, and that they would come and report it. So it could be tomorrow's Rosh Chodesh almost for sure, unless no witnesses show up. So you could go either way with this.
Probably said go for 3 days, just in case maybe it wasn't. He said go for 3 days. Why
right.
3 days? Because he needed enough time.
Right.
Also, I don't understand how you're saying that it could possibly be anything but the second day, because it says Gam Tamil Gam Hayom, so also...
why is he
also
having
today
it?
And also yesterday.
Right.
He's talking about 2 days, so it must be the second day.
No, it's for sure this. Well, it's for sure the second day of the. Well, it's either the second day of the month. These are the two options. The two options are: it's the second day of the month, or the second day of Rosh Chodesh. Now, you only have a second day of Rosh Chodesh if the first day of Rosh Chodesh was the 30th day of the previous month and was not the first day of this month. See, when we have 2 days of Rosh Chodesh, it's day 30 of the last month and day 1 of the new month.
So because he said tomorrow's Rosh Chodesh, and when we started, we were doing a Rosh Chodesh.
Right, so what did he mean? Did he mean tomorrow's Rosh Chodesh the 30th day of this month, and it's a 2 day Rosh Chodesh, or did he mean tomorrow's Rosh Chodesh the first day of the next month?
He didn't say Rosh Chodesh.
Okay. Good. So, but there are Mefarshim who are learning over here that Mimachras HaChodesh HaSheni doesn't mean the second day of the month. It means the second day of Rosh Chodesh. And that would line itself up with these opinions, Rabbeinu Hananel, that they had calculated, they calculated when Rosh Chodesh was going to be, and they would be Koveya the Chodesh based on that, just like we do nowadays. And
well, also another reason why that might be true is because maybe they had a special meal on Rosh Chodesh, and they don't have a special meal when it's not Rosh Chodesh.
Right.
So maybe that's why.
Right.
It was unexpected.
Good.
He was
so
there.
Right. So why? Right. So that's part. Right. That would be part of the proof that there's 2 days of Rosh Chodesh is that he's having a second meal today. I thought he has Rosh Chodesh meals. So apparently there's 2 days of Rosh Chodesh here. Anyway, so that's a discussion in the Mefarshim here. Whether this second day we're referring to is the second day of Rosh Chodesh or just the second day of the month. Okay, but anyways, Shaul does not see David there, and this time he doesn't understand why he's not here. And he asks Yonasan, why, you know, he knows David's a good friend of Yonasan's, why has David not come yesterday or today? Vayan Pasuk Chaf Ches, verse 28. Vayan Yehonasan Eshol. And Yonasan responded to Shaul, Nishol Nishal David Me'imadi Ad Beis Lachem. David asked me permission to go to Beis Lachem. You'll remember this is what David and Jonasson made up. That is that this is what Jonasson was going to say, that David asked permission to go to his family for a zevach, for a karban. Either it was some kind of celebration, annual celebration the family had, or it was just their own Rosh Chodesh party. But he had asked permission to go to his family. That was what they agreed that Jonasson would say. Vayomer shalcheinina. And he said, this is still Jonasson talking, he's quoting David. He said, David said to me, shalcheinina, send me please, ki zevach mishpacha lanu boyer, because we have a special meal, karban, something for the family in the city. Vehu tziva li achi. And my brother commanded me to be there. So we know that there's a mitzvah, you know, there's a mitzvah of kabed es avicha v'es imecha, to honor your father and mother. But the extra S is learned out, is darshaned to include your older brother, that you're supposed to listen to your older brother also. So he says, my brother told me to come. V'ata imatzasi chein b'einecha, and now, if I find favor in your eyes, this is still David. This is Jonasson quoting David. Jonasson quotes David, and he says, "If I find favor in your eyes, imota na veres echai, let me escape, let me go, and I will see my brothers. Al king laval el shulchan amelech. Therefore." And that now Jonasson finishes off the explanation. Therefore, he's not here for the meal. That's why he didn't come, because he went to a family celebration. Vayichar af Shaul b'Jonasson. And Shaul got very angry at Jonasson.
Does Jonasson have the power that David would be able to ask him?
Good question. So the Mefarshim say it must be that he does, that he must have been somehow, you know, assigned chief of staff or in charge of the people, that he would have that authority to grant permission. That's definitely the implication. A shofet? Chief Justice. Okay, he had some kind of... Right, definitely by implication, it sounds like he had that authority. Vayichar af Shaul b'Jonasson. And Shaul got very angry at Jonasson. Vayomer lo, and he said to him, Ben Navas Hamardus. This is definitely an insult. This one we won't have a question about. Son of a crooked rebeller. We'll come back to what he may be referring to. Hello, Yodati. I know, Shaul says to Jonasson, Kivocher ato leben Yishai, that you have chosen Ben Yishai, you've chosen the son of Jesse, the son of Yishai, David, levashtecha, for your own embarrassment, ulevoshes ervas imecha, and for the embarrassment of your mother. I know that you're siding with Jonas, with David. That's what Shaul says. He senses that Jonasson made up this story.
Is he calling Jonasson's mother?
Good question. It's not clear. Who's he insulting here? Jonasson's mother or Jonasson himself? That he's calling him... Right, when somebody calls someone a son of a gun, you know, who are they really insulting? So they're not really insulting the person's mother or father, or, you know, you could think of a more, you know, something more insulting than son of a gun. They're not calling them, they're really insulting the person themselves. But as you'll see, Mefarshim, though, may take this more literally and say no. He's talking about your mother's embarrassment. Oh, Ervasi Mecha, the nakedness of your mother. Okay, we'll see what if we. I'm not sure if I have an explanation for that. Let's see. Okay, so. Yeah, so we'll get to that. Yeah. So what is Ben Navas Hamardus? What is this son of a crooked, rebellious one? So. So Rashi here, Rashi says that Mardus here comes from the word rodeh, which is to chase or cause suffering. That he's saying she's fit for that. She's ra'oi. She's fit to be ru'uya l'rados l'yaser. She should be, she should suffer for having such a son. That's how Rashi went. Benava samardis. He's saying that, such a son, your mother should suffer for you.
Why is this reaction make sense? Why would he be mad at Jonathan? Is he saying that he doesn't believe Jonathan?
Sounds like it. It's not clear, but he seems to see through the lie. Or the,
so when the Yaakov tribes counted the males counted by the mother and daughter plus Yaakov.
But this question is, why does Shaul, how does he know, why does he get angry at Yonasan?
Because he's suspicious that he protects him.
Right, exactly. Okay. What? But what did you? All Jonas, no, but the point is, all David Jonasson said was, oh, David asked me permission to go to his family party. That doesn't sound so bad. He had a conflict. What's the big deal, right? Why does he get so angry? So it seems he saw through it. He saw and he didn't believe him.
Part of the king, he has to see through the people and live their life.
Yeah.
So he didn't buy it.
Right. That's one. Others learned is very similar to Rashi that Mardus is from the word Moredes, which is to rebel. That's why I was translating it before. She's rebellious. Your mother must be rebellious if you're so rebellious. The Malbim here learns that that he's saying your rebellion, Shaul Yonasan, is crooked. The way that you're rebelling is off. It should be the opposite. He's saying, normally, if a servant rebels against his master, it's for him to become, to throw off the yoke of mastery, or for him to become king, to take over. That's typical rebellion. Yishol is saying, if you would be rebelling against me that you could become king, would be normal. That I could almost accept. But for you to rebel against me to make someone else king, that's nava samardas. That's crooked rebellion. And he says, this will be an embarrassment to you and to your mother that you're not going to be king. And someone else is going to take over. This whole idea of yours to help David is crooked rebellion, and it's going to be an embarrassment to you. That's what Shaul was telling him. Now, Rashi mentions one other interesting thing. Rashi references a story. He says, we learned in Shoftim, at the end of Shoftim, that after the whole story of the Pilegish Begiva, so much of Shevet Binyamin was wiped out. And there were many women without husbands. So they went out to the fields and danced, and that's how they attracted new husbands, basically. Now, it says that there's a medrash that Shaul, who was from Shevet Binyamin, did not go to get to find a wife from those. Sorry, I may be mixing up. Who went out?
Well, he must go, but he actually does.
She picked him.
Yeah, no, I'm trying to remember who the girls were. If they were from Binyamin or if the men were from Binyamin.
The men from Binyamin. Because the men were
from the girls were from the other tribes. Why were there no women in Binyamin, but there were still men? Okay, I don't remember, but...
Well, they burned the entire city, so is everybody inside.
Okay, so whatever it was, they're right. There were not women around to marry, but there were men of Binyamin who needed wives. So they went to find wives, but Shaul didn't go. That's what the Medrash says. However, Rashi says that he was embarrassed, he didn't want to go, until she herself came, and his wife tracked him down. And this woman, who ended up being his wife, she was the mother of Yonasan, she was the mother of Michal also, who was David's wife. She's the one who tracked him down. And that's why he's calling her rebellious, because, you know, she went out and she came after me, and that's how I ended up married to her, and that's why he's referring to her as the rebellious one. But either way, the point is that Michal is David's wife. Michal also sides with her husband, with David, against her father. Yonasan, Michal's brother, Shaul's son, sides with David, and Shaul seems to see some connection to the fact that their mother, you know, must be somehow the source for such rebellion against their father, and therefore it sends the insult back to the mother on some level, and he calls him a Ben Navas Hamardus, a rebellious crooked one. Let's read one more pasuk. Pasuk Lamed Aleph. He says, he finishes off his statement. Ki kol hayam asher ben Yishai chay al adama, because all the days that Ben Yishai is alive, lo sikon ata o malchusecha, you and your kingship, Yonasan, or the possibility of your kingship, will not be established. Ve'ata, and now, Shaul says to Yonasan, Shlach, send forth v'kacho so elai, and bring him back to me, bring him to me, bring David to me, kiven mavesu, because he is a dead man. Now, what does he mean that he's a dead man? Does it just mean I'm going to kill him, or does he mean more than that? Some of the Mefarshim learn that he was paskinging, he was ruling, he's a chayiv misa. He deserves to be killed for being a morid b'malchus, for rebelling against the king. Now, this has already happened before. We had this, I think we already encountered this, that Shaul accused David of being a morid b'malchus the first time David runs away. But again, he's calling him a morid b'malchus, a rebelling against the king, for not coming to the meal. Or for leaving without proper permission, and therefore he's a morid b'malchus. He's rebelling against the king. If you rebel against the king, you are chayiv misa. You could be killed for that. And he's saying he's a ben mavis. He's a dead man, and now I have the right to have him killed. Okay, we'll hold here, and we have more to do here. So.